This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2023, held at Faith Builders on August 1 to 4.
So this morning, we dive into part two of our context for learning. We said there's a context, an environment in which students are learning, which is the point of our schools. And we worked on some definitions to understand school and classroom culture. We talked about climate, and we tried to actually name a few things and then try to see what was underneath those things. And hopefully that starts to illuminate what your environment, your learning environment, what your culture is like. And there's different exercises. I just want to say this maybe. There's different exercises you can do as a staff. If you're a principal here, there's things you could do that can be helpful. I've led groups through things where we just take a sticky note and people write one-word descriptions or two-word descriptions and put them on sticky notes, put them all together and see kind of what comes out of that. And maybe you start to see what values your school really has based on what is, not what you idealize should be. And there might be a difference, by the way. And so there are all kinds of ways that you can approach this question to help uncover what is it that is our learning environment? What is our culture? We also just said that culture is a very powerful force, and I don't have to say that, but I'm saying it. Again, it is us. It is a powerful force in your classroom. We can make the rules, provide the structure. At the end of the day, what wins the day? What carries the day? It's culture. And my hope is that you will understand your culture enough to strengthen the positive parts of your classroom culture and work at removing the toxic parts. Allow me to make one little foray. From what I have read, and I would say from what I have experienced, I typically say that there is, if you have a positive school culture here and it became a toxic culture here, it takes you twice as long to recover as it took you to get there. It's a process back. You can lose so much so quickly. Have you ever had that in your own classroom? Just, you had this sort of this group of students, and maybe you weren't having a great year. You were kind of, it was just kind of an off year for you, and it was going backwards. It can be really tough to recover from that. And so, in school culture, I say if it took you 2 years to get here, it takes you 4 years back. Classroom, I'm probably less certain. I want to put it out there that it is worth investing in the positive parts of your classroom to reinforce those and to remove the toxic elements, to start working against those toxic parts that we might have. But I ended yesterday by saying people are at the heart of a culture. Sure, it encompasses a lot of things, but at the end of the day, it's the people. What makes things work and not work are people. It's me. And, you know, we live in a broken and fallen world, like I needed to say that to you. We live in a broken and fallen world, and we are broken and fallen as well. And we have been redeemed by the Lord. And we are on a trajectory toward Jesus, right? And we are learning from Him, but we have not yet arrived. So we will make mistakes, and it won't be perfect. But I want to remind us that because of the redemptive nature of Jesus, there is always hope for every school, every classroom, every situation. So, let's just begin this morning's time with what a positive classroom culture can do for us. What does a positive classroom culture do for us in our classrooms? Well, for one, it simply sharpens our focus. When you have a positive culture It increases attention toward the important, what really matters. It gives positive direction to daily behavior. It, for example, if your culture highly supports a sports program and that becomes a huge value of your school, students will gravitate toward that. If your school really loves art and you have art programs and you might have evenings where you show off the children's art and it's a lot about, guess what they will move toward? They'll move toward art. If you have music if you have science, whatever it is, the emphases of your classroom, it will bring focus to that. Students will know it. They may never have actually thought about it, but it's in the water. It's there. Be careful what you celebrate. Be careful what you love, because it will sharpen focus. I had a 7th and 8th grade teacher. We called him Coach. I went to public school the first 8 years. We didn't have our own school. The principal came from my church, and numerous teachers were from Mennonite churches in the area. But in 7th and 8th grade, Coach was my teacher, and he had this thing about grammar. And so if you used incorrect grammar, he had this little method that he had a little sheet on his desk. And if you used incorrect grammar, maybe used the word ain't or used amount instead of number or whatever it might have been, any sort of grammatical mistake, he would just walk over to his desk and he would just make a little tally mark behind your name. Okay? But he had this thing that if we caught him with an incorrect use of grammar, then we got 5 points. So basically, it was a contest between him and us. Okay? So, we loved to catch him, and we did. All of us make those mistakes, right? And you were just tuned in, right? Guess what we paid attention to? Do you think it's actually helped me in the future years as I became a teacher? Yeah, I mean, it did. I was more tuned in to the value of speaking precisely and correctly than I might have been otherwise. All because this little game, it didn't affect your grade. Everyone knew, it didn't affect your grade, you didn't lose your recess. There was no punishment. It was just a thing. And that point of emphasis became a point of emphasis for all of us without him ever saying, "We're going to emphasize grammar." Everyone's sleeping. I know you diehard grammar people are about to faint, right? Because that's so glorious. And I think grammar is a good thing. It is. I just don't really enjoy teaching grammar so much. But you know, you need to know adverbial clauses. You need to know things about grammar, right? But it seemed much more palatable when you have this little emphasis going on, and then you learn these things that actually contribute to speaking correctly. It connects the dots. Very small things have an impact. How strange is it, all these years later, I remember that. In other words, it was not a core part of the curriculum. This is something he did. It became part of the culture. It became embedded in the way things were. And we were careful. For a while there, you could even help each other, but that got out of hand. We were too helpful with each other. But it's interesting how students and how I remember us choosing to speak correctly. Actually made conscious choices based on culture. Secondly, positive culture builds commitment. It's how students identify with your school. Students want to be on board with what we are doing when it is positive. Students are not our enemy. Students are not in it to make our life difficult. They make our lives difficult sometimes, but it's not the same thing as wanting to make it difficult. But see, students natively want to please. Students actually want to be on board with something bigger than themselves, even if they are kind of selfish. Kind of like we are sometimes. Right? And so students actually don't have it in for us. They want to be on board. When it is a negative culture, you will find yourself facing off to them too many times. Think about them owning the school, your classroom. Our class went to, right? Our school, we care. There's a sense of being sort of proud of being in this classroom in a humble sort of way. There's a sense of being kind of proud of that. I get to be in this classroom. All right? That's what a positive culture can do. If rituals and traditions and ceremonies and things in our classroom build a sense of community and camaraderie, students feel a level of commitment to the class and the school. They feel committed and connected to the relationships. So think about long-term teaching. You knew it was going to come somewhere. It's right here. Long-term teaching. Y'all ought to consider it if you haven't. Just think about the effect of a particular teacher that's been in your school for a very long time. Students begin to anticipate coming into that classroom, if it's positive at least. And if it's negative, they dread the thought. I've watched both. And so, Miss Yoder is here, and she used to teach here. Sorry, Miss Yoder. I don't know where you are, but I'm pretty sure you're here. There you are. I know. She's rolling her eyes at me. I don't know why. But she had these things she did for years. It was sort of a tradition, really. Like, you take your students in history class on a trip, okay, complete with passports and money in native currency and all these things. And it's a complicated thing. It's a masterful thing. I couldn't begin to do it. But students going into her classroom always anticipated that tradition. You looked forward to it. There was something to expect. It built commitment to her without her having to try to pull these people along with her. It was sort of baked into the fabric of the classroom. You know what I'm talking about? There's things that, oh, that teacher always. The same thing is true on the negative side, I'll just remind us. And so it does us well to think about what is going on. What are the things that we do? What builds identity in our classroom? Because that helps to build commitment for what we're doing as a class. Now, by the way, don't just go home and try to create a trip ex nihilo out of nothing. We just, oh, that was a great idea that Carol talked about. What works for you? What works for you is not what works for the next person. But think about the things you do that can help build that buy-in. Where before you ever get there, there's this expectation that, oh, this is how it's going to be. And there's a sense of security and safety and buy-in when there's a sense of positive expectation, because we sort of know some things. If you will stay in the classroom, only if you ought to, but if you stay in the classroom for a very long time, that is where you can build tremendous amounts of commitment for students to the learning, to the idea of learning, to the idea of this is a good thing. When school's a good thing, a lot of other things become good things for children. Okay? It affects and colors so much of a child's experience growing up, the experience they have in our classrooms. I encourage you to at least consider it. Thirdly, increases motivation. How hard students work is at least in part connected to the feeling of that classroom. And so as teachers, we make sure we recognize accomplishment and value effort. And I think our schools do pretty well with that. Sometimes we don't hold them to maybe enough of a challenge, a high enough bar. We sort of settle for less than what we'd need to. But for the most part, we ought to be very encouraging. A positive classroom brings energy. You know, it's a lot more fun to do it when you want to do it than when you have to do it. Your mama ever tell you something? Why do I have to wash the dishes? Oh, you don't have to if you want to. Used to drive me nuts. How do you answer that? How do you respond to that? I have no idea. Growing up, I had no idea. I have a few ideas, more ideas now than I did, but none of them really great rebuttals. That thing of internal motivation is a big deal. And if your classroom is a positive place to be, students are willing to work. And if they kind of want to do it, we're not trying to pull people along all the time. You have to sometimes. But it's a very different feeling. We do it because we love being here and learning. So let's just think about something very simple. Teachers should be teaching writing, correct? We should have students writing. But think about the kinds of writing you have your students do. If all the writing your students do is write this sentence 50 times because you had created this problem, you've got a problem. They will love writing. They will hate writing. Okay? If all it is always just a factual narration of something, will they love to write? Probably not. How could you get buy-in in writing? Writing is actually hard work. Well, for most of it, some of us it is. Some of you, it's easy. For me, it's very difficult. What can we do? So here's something I've watched teachers do over and over. You can buy those blank books, hardcover books, where you draw a picture on the outside, and you write on the inside, you write your autobiography, or your autobiography. You create your own book that they have forever, if they want it. Children keep those books, I'm telling you. I can attest to that. We have boxes in the attic with school stuff, and it includes books they have written. Okay? How can we inspire something? Well, it is a much more positive thing to occasionally have them write about themselves or their grandparents or something. Find creative ways that become part of the way things are done in this classroom. It will increase people's motivation. Students recognize when you have tried to think about the ways that they could learn best, and we have thought about ways to make learning a joy, not a drudgery. And yes, school is very hard work. I don't claim that it's easy or that it's always fun, but there should be an element of joy. More on that later. So I think I'm just going to stop making my case that a positive classroom culture really, really matters in the learning process. And remember, the learning process is not just about getting this child through your classroom. It's about a lifetime of learning, because that's how they were made. They will need that. If they're going to study the Bible, if they're going to be a family man, they need to be learning always. And so school is that great opportunity to do that. Now, if it was just as simple as you saying, "Oh, this is the culture I want. We will now proceed to do this," it would be one thing. But I've not found it that simple yet. When I find the recipe, I'll let you know. I said that people matter. Groups of people matter. But who influences the formation of a school culture? Who influences the formation of a classroom culture? Let's think about this. Let's take the culture, we'll say culture at large. Big picture. Okay. What has, in the broadest strokes possible, what has influenced you today? And I'll start you off. Western culture, right? If you live somewhere else, the answer wouldn't be Western. But you live here, Western culture. And beyond that, could we just say, what does say this? Hasn't American culture influenced us? Doesn't it influence your classroom every day? What might be, we're going to narrow this down into a funnel here. What else? What could go beneath the American?
East Coast.
Okay, for you it's the East Coast. Okay?
Baptist or Mennonite culture.
Okay, we're going to get to church culture soon. So we're going to come back to that. It's good. Okay, we're going to stay with just the culture at large, and then we'll do a church culture exercise. So we go East Coast. Let's back off. We're going to use the state that we're in right now. Is that okay? So we'll say Pennsylvania. Okay, and then within that, we actually live in a county here. It's Crawford. Crawford County is not the same as Lebanon County. True? Yeah. We could make some. Anyway, we'll just leave that. Right? It's that way. Crawford County is not the same. The culture here is different. There's just no way around it. And has it influenced my classroom? Well, of course it has. For one, you wouldn't believe how many deer hunting stories could be told over lunch. You have no idea how many. That's just a part of culture around here. And then, of course, here locally, we could say Guy's Mills. And we could even say families that live in Guy's Mills, which impacts. And do you see how all of this is actually people or groups of people? And somehow it all adds up to something. But when you break it down, we live in a place. It has influenced us. We can look at the church culture side of things. And here I can feel time slipping away from me all of a sudden. We could talk about Western church culture, and then we could talk about evangelicals, then we could talk about Anabaptists, and then we could talk about our particular denomination, okay? And then we could talk about your particular church. And, of course, they're made up of families, and those families have individuals in them. And all of a sudden, again, you have people tremendously influencing your classroom. And here you have culture at large. Here you have your church, which I did not fill that in. But that you have the church culture. And those sometimes are at odds with each other. In fact, probably should be more sometimes than what they are. I don't know. So when we work at our classroom culture, remember, you don't change this quickly, do you? Well, let's just all remove ourselves and become monks. And we'll become nuns and monks, and we'll go to the monasteries, and we shall just remove ourselves. How feasible is that living in the United States of America? Not terribly. Other parts of the world, maybe. Not terribly feasible. You actually live in a certain place in a certain time. And we have to live with that. It's influencing us. But I want to say, at the end of the day, when they walk into our classroom, you have a way also of influencing culture back up the funnel. It matters, because the individual matters. So let's just look at a little simplified picture here. In your classroom, you have just a number of factors. And I just want to say it again in a little different way. And that is that you have your community influences your classroom. And your church, or the churches your students come from, influence the classroom. And you influence the classroom, and students influence the classroom. And so as soon as we try to say, well, it's all the students' fault. Really? What happened to the other three players here? It's all their fault? I see. Suppose it's partly mine. Suppose The community has some things about it that are working against us. How do we start to solve these problems? These are not easily solvable problems. They aren't. They're complicated and big. And rather than burying our head in the sand, how about we work at creating a culture that's positive, that isn't manipulative and just subversive, but it actually presents a positive view, picture of life. We don't live our lives in isolation. And there's an interaction and relationship between these various groups of people and the individuals that make them. And it will shape your culture. But what can you control the best out of these? What are the areas in which they're within your authority? Which areas? Teacher. And the second one is?
Church.
In a manner of speaking, because we're part of something bigger, right? But I can't just demand the church does this.
Maybe classroom culture.
Classroom culture, has to do with your students. You see, you have to start with you. I think it's important to look at me as part of our culture. I'm the hinge pin upon which the door of classroom culture opens and closes. And what I bring affects the culture and the climate of the school. It always will. You can probably reflect on teachers. I should not get into reflection mode because there's too many stories to tell and then I'll get waylaid. But my quintessential, my perfect example of culture maker is my third and fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Wilt. And I will not tell you stories about her, many. All I can tell you is that my experience in school, should it have continued as it was in 3 and 4, would have halted at grade 12, and I never touched a classroom ever. Okay? Because she meant well. She was, I think, 88, and she just died here recently. She wasn't, okay? Come on, guys. She wasn't quite that old. In my third and fourth grade mind, she was 88 years old. Okay. Now, she had this thing. I was probably not the most angelic student. I get that. I confess to that. But I wasn't the worst one either. But, you know, if you forgot to put your name, I can remember this as clear as just seeing you here. If you don't write your name on your paper again, I'm going to prick your finger and write your name in blood. Oh, that's common. That'll be 39 lashes with a wet noodle. Or she had fingernails that were impressive. They ought not to be allowed, actually. They're school weapons, I believe. They were very long. And if you at all twitched or did something in line to go to recess, she would take those fingernails and she would embed them in your scalp as you walked past. And you would just, as you walked out. That was my picture. For third and fourth grade, that was how it was. That affect classroom culture? She was the hinge pin. I began to hate school. I cried every morning I had to go to school. In sixth grade, I had a teacher who loved us, loved teaching. Naive, young, fresh out of college, but she loved students. And she actually liked me. And she didn't say things like that. And pretty soon I was being called the teacher's pet. Whatever. Okay, and that is what I was called. I was a teacher's pet. I didn't mean to be. All I knew was that I loved my teacher and she loved me. The classroom feel was completely different. Same group of students, folks. Very different feel. I'm saying that you as a teacher hold one of the keys to the classroom. And sometimes we need help to see ourselves. We're not very good self-evaluators. Some things we are, but sometimes we have this hunch. If you have a hunch, maybe you ought to ask somebody about your hunch. And is this how I am? Is this who I've become? We start with me. But remember, you're also dealing with students. And they're under your authority. And so we do need to shape
our students. We have the responsibility to do that. And they're a part of what our classroom culture looks like. And so these two, students and teachers, are the ones who need, who can work together to build this. Of course you're working with parents and your churches and all of that. But I, as a teacher, you hold one of the keys, and maybe even a primary key in your classroom cultures. I've realized that you can have students coming from very difficult backgrounds. We call them sometimes trauma kids, trauma children, who can flourish in our classrooms with time. Not because their environment's great, but because your classroom's great. What I'm trying to say is that the most important part of your classroom culture is you. We need to work on that one. Do I love my students? Am I in this for the right reasons? And yes, it's true the broader school culture matters, but students quickly learn to know you and what you expect. And if your classroom is one of learning and order, or is it just chaos and dysfunction? Now, let me just give you two words before I have you do an assignment. And there's two qualities that I have just been trying to say as many times as I can, as many places as I can. And it has to do with Doug Lamov, who wrote Teach Like a Champion, which I recommend the book. It's not what you read before you go to sleep at night, but it's a very, very good book. And you should read it. And that is that there's a whole host of issues that go away if you have two things in place in your classroom. So I'm trying to give you two words that will give you something by which to anchor maybe your classroom that I would encourage you to nurture: joy. We laugh together. Joseph was talking about that earlier. We laugh together. We have a good time together. If you're a junior high teacher, you make terrible jokes. It's how what you do. And after a while, if you're a dad, they become dad jokes. Now my students say, oh, it's a dad joke. Proud of it. And we have a lot of good times. There's a peace and a contentedness when there's joy. And even when there's hardship, there's a sense of joy in it, that we're in it together. If you nurture the quality of joy, you will avoid a host of classroom culture issues. The second one is rigor. Are they challenged? Not overwhelmed, but are they challenged? Are they working? Are they busy doing things that matter, or busy doing busy work? Students get the difference. Do they find fulfillment in thinking hard, even if it is hard? All of us as adults know the good feeling of accomplishment. We've done something tough. Students are no different. They want to be challenged. They say they don't want to be. It's too hard. Oh, well, maybe it is. Maybe we shouldn't do that. Maybe I should. Oh, well, it's not that hard. Okay, yeah. See, students actually want to be challenged. If you can have hard work mixed with joy, they're occupied. They're happy. Folks, there's a lot. You solved a lot of problems. Okay, so I'm just trying to give you two words from Lamov that I think are really, really important. It is such a joy to be in a classroom working with young people and thinking about how this is going to change their picture of learning, of knowing and loving God through learning. Joy and rigor. There's a lot more we could talk about there. What I'd like for you now to do is turn the page. Let's do a little personal evaluation. So I've chosen to keep this personal, which in the turn and tell section might be a little bit tough. It'll be okay. You will survive this. What I'd like for you to do is simply name a personal strength you bring into the classroom. It could be a skill, an attitude, or a character quality. Something that you know that you bring. Yes, it's okay to think about something that's good about you It's not pride, necessarily. Unless you go tell all of us. If you just tell your partner, it's no problem. Okay, so what is it? What is a personal strength of yours? Okay, and then I want you, secondly, to say, in what ways does this affect your classroom culture? How has that helped your culture? What I bring, how has that helped us? Now you have to put words to it. So I'll give you a few minutes here. Okay, now let me, some of you aren't sure what you're supposed to write there yet. So one of the things I think I might bring is some optimism. Like I tend not to live in the dumps all the time, fairly optimistic. And how that affects the classroom, I think, is that students who struggle feel hope. They're with me. Like, it's gonna be okay. We're gonna get this. We're gonna get through this. That's just a simple example. Okay, did you write yours down now? Okay, you did. Turn and tell. No one wants to talk now. I see this. I want you to know that you can actually talk about something that's good about you with each other without being arrogant, right? Now you know you can do that. It's okay. You were really hesitant there, weren't you? I understand. It's good to be around such humble people. But I think it's helpful to actually know, what do I bring that's a strength? Maybe you should make a list of the top five things that you bring. Skill, attitude, all kinds of different things you could put in there, because that's what you leverage to make your classroom a good place. It comes naturally. It's kind of who you are. It allows you to function out of your strength instead of always living out of your weaknesses. Now, second part we're not going to do. Isn't that a relief? You could do that so quickly. I know this about you. You have 10 things you thought about there, and you're trying to figure out what to put in the first one. Shame on you. Here's the thing, folks. You have weaknesses, too. We have to reckon with it. How does it affect? What I want you to think about, though, is the power of understanding ourselves so that we can guide our classroom culture. Because we know ourselves. We understand a bit who we are. Now, I want to just say this. When I talk to you like this, what can happen is that you feel the entire weight of the world of your classroom on your shoulder. Everything hinges on you. I've tried to say there's lots of things pressing in, but I want us to start with us. That's who we can change. That's what we can do something about me with Jesus' help. And I want to remind you that your acquaintance and relationship with Jesus matters. Jesus' yoke is easy, his burden is light. If we allow him to carry that, as well as those around us, which is why you ought to talk to each other about your weaknesses too. Have other people walk with you through those. We're not doing this so we have the most spectacular classroom in the world. You might have. We're doing this because we care about children and the discipling of young people into the kingdom. And so I'm praying that as you think about your life, your teaching, you can leverage those strengths and find ways to minimize the things that are hard for you, that are weaknesses, and provide this rich learning environment for your young people.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at christianlearning.org or call 814-789-4769. Many Faith Builders recordings are also available on the Dock for Learning at thedockforlearning.org.